This is Scott Becker, and I'm thrilled to have Dr. Hudson Gear with us today to talk more about coronavirus and a number of issues related to the economy, balancing safety in the economy, what does the end game look like, also how do you protect people in nursing homes, how does this present to pediatrics and more. We'll try and keep this relatively short form. Dr. Garrett, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you very much for having me again. It's a pleasure to be back on. My name is Hudson Garrett. I'm an infectious disease specialist based out of Atlanta and an adjunct assistant professor of medicine in the Division of Infectious Diseases at the University of Louisville School of Medicine.
Thank you. And let's take first one of the questions around nursing homes, because there's been so much discussion about nursing homes and a lot of deaths at nursing homes. Any thoughts on what's being done to protect residents and keep families informed?
You know, that's a very difficult subject right now because, as you've probably seen in the news media, many hospitalized patients have been discharged to nursing homes. And we've also had residents that have been unfortunately infected at nursing homes seek treatment at hospitals. And so this has created a real big demand problem for nursing home healthcare staff, as well as for proper PPE. Just yesterday, CMS released new guidance that requires nursing homes to notify both the resident as well as the family member of positive COVID cases in nursing home facilities. And so this is certainly a first step, but, you know, we really need to drive better usage of PPE, better staffing models, as well as, quite frankly, better infection prevention adherence to sort of the core practices that we should be doing all along. And so there's certainly a lot of opportunity for improvement. But many of these facilities are doing the absolute best that they can as well, but we certainly got a long ways to go.
Another question for you, which is near and dear to health systems and providers and so forth, revolves around elective surgeries. What's the sense? When will elective surgeries resume? Are they safe for staff and the physicians? Are they safe for patients? What's your sense of that, and how concerned should everybody be about moving forward with elective surgeries?
Well, I think if you're a patient, you have every right to ask that question, especially if you're a patient that's been patiently waiting for your elective procedure. And so yesterday, CMS released new guidance to relax the restrictions on elective procedures as long as states and healthcare facilities can meet certain criteria for safely operating on these patients. And these include things like availability of staff, universal screening of the patient, as well as our healthcare team, widespread accessibility of PPE, and also making sure that the infrastructure is there to support these patients. And if all of those criteria are able to be met, then it's certainly safe to bring these patients in. I think you will see a shift from some of these procedures being done at hospitals to ambulatory care centers where the risk is a little bit lower. But we'll certainly see more and more procedures start to take place over the next few weeks, especially. And for patients, again, this is important because they need those procedures and they've been putting these off. But there is that sort of risk-benefit analysis that has to be done. So if you're a patient with lots of comorbidities or health issues, then that's worth a conversation with your surgeon prior to entering an arrangement to move forward procedures. But I think generally you'll see a lot of safe procedures taking place in a quick amount of time, and we'll continue to ease into this as we reopen the economy as well as healthcare.
Just to that question, how quickly do you think this will ramp up, or is it going to be slow just based on the lack of testing or still shortages in PPE? What's your sense of pace in terms of how systems and physicians' offices and surgeries ramp up?
Well, I think it'll be state by state and facility by facility. So if you're in a geography where there's very little community transmission and you have good, adequate resources within your healthcare facility, then it's pretty safe to move forward rapidly. From some of the other places like New York City, some spots in Texas, Atlanta, I'm thinking of a couple places that have ongoing community transmission. This might be a slower process, but again, it'll be made by the healthcare facility itself to make sure that they have the necessary tools, equipment, personnel, and staffing models in place to safely do this. But I think it'll be sort of a hodgepodge of how quickly this will take place based on data-driven approaches, which is what we want to see from a public health perspective.
Thank you. And you've also studied some the impact of this and how it presents in pediatrics. Can you give us a couple thoughts there on what you're seeing with pediatrics and how it presents and so forth?
Absolutely. And, you know, pediatrics have been sort of underreported due to lack of testing, but we also have seen a difference in the symptomology. So in addition to the traditional signs like fever and cough and shortness of breath, with pediatrics, we also see sort of the poor feeding. We see malaise and fatigue. We see headaches. We see a lot of nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. And there's also a fairly large amount of people that were asymptomatic, close to 15%. And so with kids, we want to make sure we're closely monitoring them. They can also serve as carriers and infect us as healthcare workers and adults. And so this is something that's evolving. And just earlier today, Massachusetts was reporting a high amount of pediatric cases as well. And so this is an area where we have probably an under-reporting of data. We need to watch this more carefully, but we also want to work collaboratively with our pediatricians and our other pediatric providers to not miss these cases and ensure that we're isolating these pediatric patients as well. And I think this, you know, unfortunately has relevance to reopening of schools. And so until we get a better handle of what the true sort of prevalence of these pediatric infections is, it might behoove us to think about how we're going to handle schooling for the next few months.
Dr. Garrett, you've talked a decent amount about how prevalent this may be in pediatrics and what you're seeing there, some of the challenges in nursing homes, some of the challenges in ramping up elective surgery. It seems that the solution on this, if there's a solution, is some mix of extensive testing to really know who has it, who doesn't have it, vaccines at some point, but we don't know how quickly that'll be, and then there's vaccine, other issues of vaccines, and then there's therapeutic approaches. Can you just give us a few moments on those three issues, testing, medicines, and vaccines?
Sure. So I think really our long-term end goal to stop the community spread of this and essentially stop the pandemic is a vaccine. Certainly short-term is looking at incidence of testing, which we have sort of two different parameters. We have testing to determine whether you have the virus, and then we have antibody testing, which is becoming more widely available in the community to look at, were you exposed and did you develop any type of immunity? This leads to treatment options like plasma, and certainly we'll see antiviral therapies, which are being studied now, and there's lots of different options associated with that. So if you're a patient and you're suffering from COVID-19 infection, you want immediate access to a medicine. You want some type of therapeutic option that's going to essentially treat your infection. But as we look at this from a long-term public health longevity standpoint and something that's a sustainable solution to stop transmission, it's really a vaccine. And so, you know, timing on that is anywhere from 12 to 18 months. Just earlier today, the former FDA commissioner even mentioned that there might be some type of public health availability of a vaccine this fall, assuming that the trials go well. But again, that wouldn't be widespread. That would be in sort of a pandemic type situation. But our goal is a safe and effective vaccine, safe and efficacious and widely available antiviral therapies, and really understanding the sort of prevalence of this disease in the community through a combination of testing to determine if you have it, and then if you've been exposed and have developed any type of resistance or antibodies.
Thank you, Dr. Gere, for joining us again. You're always incredibly informative in these issues, and we appreciate your time greatly. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.